When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
You can torture me with Donnie and Marie. You can play some Barry Manilow.
Or you Matt, can play we are back shock with another Weird Al parody, and I'm so excited we have one of my good buddies that I've made in the world of podcasting. He is a documentary filmmaker, and now he's got a feature horror film that needs our listeners' help. At the time this is coming out, it's just at the tail end of the Indiegogo campaign. Taylor Morden, come in, come sit down with us, and tell us a little bit about Vampire before we dive in to Achy Breaky Song by Weird Al Yankovic.
Great. Okay, hello. Thank you. I was caught off guard. I wasn't expecting to open with the plugs.
I would say that's a real special treatment you're getting right now. You get to open with the plug. You could then just bail, and we would be totally lost.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tie it to Weird Al, because our movie is almost a parody of an existing property, right? It is a horror comedy based on the book that Bambi is based on, because that's in the public domain. It's not based on the Disney movie. They can, you know, call off the lawyers.
Very good.
It's an indie horror comedy. It was wildly ambitious. We've shot most of it. And the real kicker is that all the animals in our movie are animated, hand-drawn 2D animation, not in the Disney style. Again, lawyers, calm down. And right now we're raising money to finish the movie and get this animation done so we can release, you know, Evil Dead 2 meets Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I mean, that's a great pitch.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm in.
Yeah, so hit up the Indiegogo. Do you know what the short link for people to find the Indiegogo is? You have a .com or anything?
Vampiremovie.com.
There you go. Hit up vampiremovie.com and go donate to this, which it feels like it could be a mean-spirited movie, but it's still a little bit funny, which kind of goes hand-in-hand with Achy Breaky Song, which is a mean-spirited song parody.
Now I get why Matt led with the pitch. He's a genius, guys. Matt Kelly knows what he's doing. Everyone give it up for Matt Kelly. I'm running the show here. That was beautifully done.
One of the top Matts.
I try.
One of the best Matts in this chat right now.
Yes. Top two.
I'm not the only... I mean, obviously the three of us are going to say that this is pretty mean-spirited, but... I made sure to grab my copy of Weird Al Seriously to see what Weird Al has to say about this. And Weird Al actually refers to it as his most insulting song. He isn't fond of this parody. He considers it extremely mean-spirited and that he crossed the line. And that him and the original writer of the song both agreed that because the song was so mean-spirited, any proceeds tied to this song would be donated to the United Cerebral Palsy Association, so that they weren't profiting off the mean-spiritedness of this parody. Once again, even when Al's a mean guy in his parodies, he's a stand-up human being in the world still. So.
Very impressive that the original writer of this song, who's, I have his name here somewhere, it was Don something, Don Von Tress, he got Don to agree to this as well. The fact that both of them agreed to donate the money is really impressive. Like, that's quite a big gesture from both of them, because this did, like... Again, not to jump ahead too much, this song did really well for Al. This actually hit the country charts, which is the first time that Al, I'm going to say the first time as if that's surprising news. Of course, it's the first time Al hit the country charts. But he did. He actually had a charting single with this track. And it wasn't a single. It didn't have a video. It wasn't like, I mean, I guess it got a radio push, of course, but it wasn't a traditional single. And yeah, I mean, so they probably did raise a nice little chunk of change here, which is really nice. Again, considering that this is so surprisingly nasty and shrewd of him to do.
So I have two other quotes that I want to mention. Actually, three other quotes. I'll just get these all out of the way. So, you know, past guest Lily Hirsch, who wrote Weird Al Seriously, she does point out in the book that as much as the song is about complaining about the song, the only thing Al changes is the lyrics. So he is still...
I have that in my notes.
Yeah, he's still discussing this nauseating song by being the person performing the song. So it kind of creates this weird, like, snake eating its tail effect. Yeah. She asked him about all of the artists that he name checked. Specifically, she said, you mentioned Barry Manilow a lot. Is he one of your least favorite artists? And he said, no, I like Barry. I've got nothing against him. He plays the accordion, for crying out loud. And then explained that the outline of the song was that he just went through songs where he'd imagine a lot of people might be irritated by the artist or song, and that he's very aware that many people would put him on a list of artists that they find very irritating, so that it kind of felt like it was still, you know, him snake eating its tail type situation. Like, people are probably really annoyed with me as much as they're annoyed with this song. So this is just like a double layered situation here.
Yeah, no, I definitely noted that. I think that his picks for the annoying references in this song are, I think, not his taste and more popular opinion at the time. It definitely doesn't seem like, because first of all, we have to shout out two Al references, New Kids on the Block and Tiffany, two people he has parodied.
Yeah. Yep.
Up until this point.
And Vanilla Ice, who he put into a polka.
He puts Vanilla Ice into a polka. The other, I will just run him down really quick because I haven't written down. Everyone he makes fun of terrible but not as bad as this song is essentially what he's saying, is Donny and Marie Osmond, Barry Manilow, New Kids on the Block, The Village People, Vanilla Ice, The Bee Gees, Debbie Boone, ABBA, Slim Whitman, another person who's been referenced before by Al, Zamfir. Which is a wild reference. Yoko Ono, and then Tiffany at the end. So again, those are... I love the fact that he throws in Slim Whitman. For people who don't remember, he references Slim Whitman in The Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota as an example of extremely annoying music to be on a road trip listening to. But Slim Whitman is also just weird enough that I'll bet Al loves Slim Whitman.
Well, I was going to say, if those of you aren't familiar with Slim Whitman... he's also, I believe, the yodeler who saves the world in Mars Attacks.
That's exactly right. The one who makes the aliens' brains explode. Thank you, Matt Kelly, for that. That's exactly right. So yeah, totally.
He gets it. And, I mean, it's worth saying, this is not new information. Just go on the Wikipedia if you forgot about this. You know, he's coming at Billy Ray Cyrus, and then 18 years later, he's parodying Billy Ray's daughter, Miley, when he does Party in the CIA. So,
absolutely.
You know, he's really got it out for those Ray Cyrus kids. I'm surprised he didn't do a Metro Station parody. Just like, take them all down at once.
Like, just destroy the whole family. Oh, I forgot about Metro Station. What a great reminder.
I did not. So this is kind of an interesting one, though, because this is the first time that our guest kind of just got assigned a song, because he told me the time frame that the Indiegogo was on, and I said, well, this is the last one that we have to record. So yeah.
It was quite a roller coaster.
How familiar were you with the song? How, like,
I'm incredibly familiar with Weird Al, and this album was my, you know, I was 12 when this came out, so it's exactly, you know, the one
right in the sweet spot. Yeah.
Off the Deep End was also huge for me, but like, this was the one where I bought it myself. You know, it was like the first one I went out and bought. So I'm very familiar with the song, but the roller coaster of emotions when Matt says, hey, you want to be on my Weird Al podcast? And I get so excited. And he's like, we're going to talk about Achy Breaky Song. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess.
We'll definitely have to have you on for a later episode where you can pick the song you want. But
I'm really glad. I'm really, really glad to have a guest on to talk about this track, because this is such a great. It reminds me of when we had on someone to talk about Girls Just Want to Have Lunch, which is another kind of famously, like, even Al does not love this parody that he did.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting to think about now. I, like, now listening to this, this feels like we've talked before about how Al will make some choices for purely creative, artistic, interesting reasons. He's trying to like get an interesting, he's trying to make a point, a satirical point in a song. There's got grander themes going on. And then sometimes he does something that just seems very, very business-based.
Yeah. Mm.
This is a shrewd, and like, I don't want to take anything away, because I think at the time he did this, I think this was a really, really smart parody to do, because it was a completely ubiquitous song that was just the right kind of earworm that was so irritating how catchy and everywhere this track was. So for Al to do a spoof mocking it like this was guaranteed to land. Like, but it's also so like business focused and less about like a really clever joke that it doesn't hit as, it's not as satisfying as so many of his other ones that have done well over the years or felt like a smart move in a different way, you know?
And I hate saying this again because I feel like a broken record, but I think that that's always been my biggest problem with the Alapalooza album as a whole, is it feels like a very business thought out record compared to a lot of his others. Because like we said, he's doing this Jurassic Park one to tie in to the success of Jurassic Park. He admits that he did Bedrock Anthem because he knew a Flintstones movie was coming out and thought that it could get him on the soundtrack. He's writing the theme song for Talk Soup. Like, there's just a lot.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of tracks on here that I think that if the year was 1994 and a couple of those potential opportunities had already passed, he would have been like, oh, there's no way I'm recording this. This is not good. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that I think got rushed through because it was the best business decision in 1993 to do it. And Achy Breaky Song's right up there. Like, it's just another example. I will say this, though. Didn't hate this as much as I thought I was going to hate it when I went to revisit it. I mean, it's not, there's no way this is like in my top Al parodies by any stretch of the imagination, but I remember being like, when I went to hit play today, I was like, oh God. And then I was like, all right, that was fun. Like it's fine. Like, there's a couple good lines in there. I love the idea of playing Tiffany on 8-track in 1993. Like it's just, there's some really fun, intentionally dated references kind of mixed in here. But yeah.
It's true. Yeah. No, it's funny you say that, Matt, because I listened to this and I actually thought to myself, I listened to this and then I actually went back and I listened to Achy Breaky Song. Side note. Did you guys know that Billy Ray Cyrus is not the original artist on Achy Breaky Song? Achy Breaky Heart, excuse me?
Yeah, it's a cover.
Yeah.
It's a cover. I did not know that. I have no idea if that was common. It's, who did it originally? This group, oh God, I don't know.
There's
I have
like
things written down.
While you're trying to find that, like, there's a weirdly long history with country artists hitting it big. Like, you even look at like someone like Garth Brooks or Alan Jackson's like recording career. And so many of their songs are covers of a song from like just a year or two earlier that another country artist did. It's almost like country is the one genre that's still doing that thing that like the 30s jazz singers would do, where they'd all be covering the same random Broadway show tunes at once.
So the original version of Achy Breaky Heart was recorded by the Marcy Brothers in 1991. I listened to that as well. That version is more country, like more traditional. It's got fiddle solos and stuff in it. This is an interesting time. This is too much of a tangent to really go down. But at this moment in country music, people were starting to integrate more like rock and roll elements and electric guitars, which purists were not on board for like the 80s, like mid 80s into the 90s. That's, you just mentioned Garth Brooks. That's kind of when he starts, or Winona Judd, these people who start to do like pop country, which was new, and people were like, electric instruments on country records was unheard of for a long time. So the original version of this did not do very well. Billy Ray Cyrus covers it a year later and has this massive, massive hit. Thoughts and prayers for the Marcy Brothers, who saw no benefit from that, because they didn't write the song. They just did the first recording that failed. So they got nothing out of that deal.
I bet you they sold a handful of records in the stores because people saw the name of the song and didn't know any better.
Yep.
Well, if
you might have seen this much benefit.
I'm sure when you played that song on Spotify or YouTube or anything, all of them just jumped out of their seats because they're like, someone's playing it. Someone's playing it.
I got to tell you, I have to point out, because you just referenced like, oh, people who saw the track name on a CD, maybe they bought it anyway. They had a different name for the song.
Right.
Their version was called Don't Tell My Heart.
Don't Tell My Heart. I went down a rabbit hole of Billy Ray Cyrus interviews for that time. And he talks about, like, he takes a lot of credit for renaming the song. Like, that was his contribution to the
that
song.
That was his creative contribution.
He's like, here's what I did.
But you know what? From doing One Hit Wonder, I've learned that there are a million and one weird things that make a song a hit or not. And maybe that slight little thing where it's like, yeah, that's the part that you remember when you hear the song is the achy breaky song part.
It's possible that helped, like, but also maybe Billy Ray was just in the, like, again, that more like pop country, like if this was a crossover hit. If it was just a country track, it was, at the, again, we're talking about the 90s. It's a different time in music, but a country song is relegated to country charts, generally speaking. Like the idea of a crossover was not really a thing that was happening yet. This was a huge crossover hit.
That's why I use Billy Ray Cyrus a lot on One Hit Wonder as an example of like the difference between when people complain when we do like a band like, say, Lit on One Hit Wonder, and they're like, they had so many hits. And I was like, they had hits on the rock charts. But like the reverse is like most people don't blink an eye at calling Billy Ray Cyrus a one hit wonder. But if you look at his country charts, so many number one country hits.
Yeah.
Like he was like crushing it on there. It's so funny because at the time in the 90s, my parents and my sisters loved country. So it was like this thing that I couldn't stand on road trips. They were always listening to 90s country. So I'd have my headphones on listening to, like, I don't know, Silverchair, Nirvana, or whatever album I had. And now, like, you put on any like country song from like 1990 to 1995, and it's like a weird warm blanket of just like, oh, the simpler times when there wasn't trap beats behind country songs.
Yeah, it's true.
And nothing was like weirdly politically driven and overly patriotic. It was just like heartbreak songs and songs about getting drunk, and that was it. Like,
yeah. No, we've come a long way. I don't know if we're going the right way, but we've come a long way. I don't know which way we're going, but yeah.
It is weird the nostalgia you can feel to genres and songs that you used to hate as a kid, because it's just like,
it reminds you
back then. Maybe
and
that's
you know what?
The Achy Breaky song. It just reminds me of being a kid listening to it. So it's not as annoying now. I'm like,
and
okay.
I was just going to say, having gone back and listened to the Billy Ray Cyrus and the original version, but let's just listening to Billy Ray's, a rare moment where when I heard that, I was like, I actually might prefer this to Al's version. Like, it's fine. I mean, I've been now detached from it because this was the song, like, again, for my childhood, I was the perfect age for every time the car radio went on with my parents.
Yeah.
Achy Breaky Heart was playing nonstop. I must have heard it a million times, and I haven't heard it in years now, of course. And to revisit it now, I was like, you know, this is a perfectly nice song. I think it does the job completely fine. I mean, Al's parody is funny, and it did make me laugh a couple times. I love the fact that he is, there's something so fun about hearing him be so mean.
Yeah.
Because it's just so out of character for him. It's just so rare. I mean, really, I don't think we're going to have something like this again.
No.
Not that I can think of right now that he will ever touch, this particular pointed sort of style.
So can I throw a prediction on why that might be? Honestly, is I think that because the next album after this is Bad Hair Day and the Amish Paradise controversy with Coolio.
Right.
I feel like, how do I word this? When we were doing Horror Movie Night or even One Hit Wonder, there's a certain point when you're like complaining about someone where you don't ever imagine they're going to hear your complaints.
Right.
But then there's this moment where, say, I don't know, let's just pull a name out of the ether. BB Mac messages you and is very upset about what you said about them on a podcast. Then from that point on, you go into every recording being like, they might hear this.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that Coolio situation specifically made Al really be like, I don't know if I can do any more songs that are so mean if the artist is possibly going to hear it and be very upset by it. Because I think the only other time he even does something like this where the parody is about the work of art itself. I think we talked about this. Like, this is one of the songs that is like this and Smells Like Nirvana are covered as true parodies. It is a commentary on the thing that it's parodying. Yeah. I don't think it happens again until like Perform This Way with Lady Gaga, where that is a song commentating.
True. That's a good example.
Artist. But
that's
like,
a good example.
I think he steps way far back from using the artist and the song as what the point of satire is anymore, and starts to lean much further into like outrageous stuff instead. Because, I mean, all three of us are punk and ska loving dudes. He could have been so mean with Pretty Fly for a White Guy, and he went with the very safe Pretty Fly for a Rabbi route. Like,
yeah, doesn't feel safe now.
No. But at the time, it was like, this is definitely not commentating on a punk band losing all of their punk credentials in a single track.
Yeah.
The way he very easily could have. The way that many people on the internet did.
Like, I think it was MC Lars who came on the show who specifically noted how it's been written about that. So this is interesting because it gets brought up all the time about how Al does not technically need to ask permission to do a parody, right? Because parody law protects people. Having said that, Al always gets permission. And really nobody in history, it's never really gone to trial. No one's ever taken this to court over a parody at Al's level. Yeah. To see what actually would shake down if someone was, because the tricky thing about Al is not only is he parodying a song, but he's usually bringing all this other like pop culture intellectual property into the mix. And he's like referencing films or television or just other products. Like it in theory should work, but the amount of stuff he's taking from would make it a dicey thing. This song in particular, as well as Smells Like Nirvana, are referenced. And I hadn't thought about Perform This Way, but you're right, Matt. As if you took it to court, this is truly like by the definition of the book, what a parody is. Yeah. Is you're taking a thing that exists and you are turning the lyrics back on it. You're changing it to make fun of the thing.
Yeah,
and that he in theory would not have needed to ask permission. And ironic that by Al's standard is the time where you need to ask the most permission because he is being as negative as he could possibly be. Usually his stuff is very celebratory and very like, oh, isn't it great? We can like mash all this pop culture joy together and create this thing that kind of celebrates all of it. At least to me, that's always how I think of Al's work like that. But yeah, no, this is the total opposite.
Yeah.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right. So come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the problem with a song like this also from our stance is it's making fun of a repetitive song, which also means that there's not even that many lyrics to break down. Like it's kind of just the chorus over and over and over again with like two very fast verses.
Yep,
it's true. Al does change the choruses each time, unlike Achy Breaky Heart, which just repeats the same chorus each time. Al does his wonderful trick of getting extra jokes in on each chorus where about blowing up his radio or sticking a pitchfork in his brain or the nauseating song making him lose his lunch. He does manage to get some extra terrain out of the repeat nature of this track, but it is quite repetitive.
Honestly, the only thing that stands out for me on this song that I definitely want to make sure we comment on is the like lack of a better term, like the fart and duck quack noises that sometimes kick in background when it goes to instrumental parts. Such a weird choice to mix in there. It's not really commenting on anything. It's just kind of there.
It felt like it was there just so that if you heard it, if you tuned into the radio and it was in the middle of it, you would know it wasn't the original.
Yeah.
It's the only way you would be able to tell that this isn't the Billy Ray version.
That's true.
Just because there are fart noises and duck quacks and weird sounds. Because there's long instrumental breaks in this song, which is odd.
It is funny. He took quite a few years. He took a long break from the fart noises.
Yeah.
We talked about like his first album is littered with fart sounds, like just the whole time. He had the guy, I should have this name ready, but the guy who does the manualist who does like the hand farts on the record, and he's around a lot in the beginning. He disappears, and he's back, guys. We got him back
for this song,
for this track,
for Al's first and possibly only charting country hit.
Yeah,
I
did not enjoy re-listening to this as much as you guys did. However,
I actually preferred the original. I was like, I'm on board for Billy Ray. I didn't expect that to happen, but I was like, this is fine. This isn't bad.
Also, Billy, like the lyrics in the original almost sound like Weird Al could have written them. It's just a list of body parts and how you interact.
True.
It's like, oh, if that was a Weird Al version of a different song, you'd be like, yeah, he's just listing body parts and how they relate to a relationship. It'd be a little bit funnier, but it's about as funny as this song, which is just listing bands that are annoying.
Yeah.
Objectively, I guess.
The original song has the lyric, "You can tell my arms go back to the farm."
That is the
dumbest rhyme I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
That is so bad.
However, in my research for this, after listening to the original and the cover and all this, I found a version of Weird Al's version that I actually loved, which was when he performed it live on Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yes. Oh and my God. I'm so glad you're referencing this.
An acoustic accordion performance of this song.
Yes.
That is phenomenal.
Well,
it is the best version of this song, in my opinion.
Fill me in, because if you remember, one of my biggest complaints of every album since his first album is that I loved that the accordion was prominent on every song in that first album. And it kind of made the songs feel like their own. So if you're telling me that he does it with the accordion, I actually think
it's him alone, Mac. It's him alone.
A solo acoustic accordion performance. Regis and Kathy Lee, and the interview's up on YouTube, and they do not understand. Like, they're trying to be in on the joke with Weird Al, and he's just like, oh, man, you guys don't get it at all.
The pre-roll interview that they do with Al is one of the most cringy and horrible things I have ever seen in my life.
Okay.
Like, it starts with... So first of all, I'm reading into it a little bit. I don't think Regis Philbin was a fan or understood even a little bit. Kathy Lee is trying to play along, and Kathy Lee is doing that. You gotta love this guy. He's a kook. She describes him as a kook. And Regis reads off the CD that it's Alapalooza, but then he keeps calling it, at one point he calls it Alapazuma, which I really loved.
Is that Weird Al's COVID special?
Exactly.
Alapazuma.
Alapazuma. And they're trying to make jokes off of it, and none of the jokes are landing. The audience is not laughing at all. And it one exchange I wrote down because I loved it so much, Regis just says, he's like, there you know, every time somebody has a big hit, there you are. And Al just goes, yeah, that's my job. and Regis goes, oh, that's your job. You keep everybody in this business in line. That's really funny. Total silence. And Al goes, well, it cracks me up. And I loved that so much. It cracks me up. And then just the most like obvious questions that he gets all the time, where Kathy Lee is like, oh, when you're not on stage, are you weird in regular life? And Al's response to that is like, well, actually, when I'm not on stage, I'm a middle-aged Japanese woman.
Yes.
He gets asked about his dating life. He pretends to cry. But he does Achy Breaky Song. He does the first verse and chorus. Mm-hmm. And he goes on this like instrumental break, and he's doing like the instrumental section for like kind of a while. And Regis interrupts him and goes, are you going to do more? We want to hear more. And Al is like, I forgot the words.
You can torture me with Bonnie and Marie. You can play some Barry Manilow. Or you can play some schlock like New Kids on the Block. Or any Village People song you know. Or play Vanilla Ice. Hey, you could play them twice. And you can play the Bee Gees any day. But Mr. DJ, please, I'm begging on my knees. I just can't take no more of Billy Ray. Don't play that song, that achy breaky song, the most annoying song I know. And if you play that song, that achy breaky song, I might blow up my radio.
Everybody! Hey. The answer is back there.
Okay, I'm ready for the second chorus.
You want more?
Yeah, did you forget it or what?
Yeah! Kathy said we're having a musical interlude. I said either that or Al's forgot the words, and he did.
That's exactly what happened.
Forgot the words.
Oh, I don't remember the words.
Al cuts the song short because he cannot remember. Again, just to picture it, he's not on a stage. He is sitting in the chair next to Regis and Kathy Lee and just picks up an accordion and
a
starts playing
accordion.
This song. A rental accordion, he notes. And they pull the plug on him because he can't remember the words. I found on the old Ask Al forum on his website, Stephanie of Indiana asks, what is the most embarrassing thing you've ever done on television? Al says, I'd have to say it was completely blanking out and forgetting all the words to Icky Breaky Song during a national live appearance on Regis and Kathy Lee. And I brought along cue cards the next time I did the show. How about that? And despite that, it is still great. And it's really fun. You know what? Honestly, you can hear it in the polkas and stuff, but just to hear him and see him play accordion alone like that makes you appreciate how incredibly good at the accordion he is. It is effortless. And he is just like, even that's a such stupid, simple song. And you can still see how virtuoso he is on that instrument. It's amazing.
So I have one other thing that I want to connect to, not Achy Breaky Song, but Achy Breaky Heart, is there's this guy who, he doesn't help us out with it anymore, but for many years he helped us out at the Geekscape San Diego Comic-Con table, who was originally from Brazil. He's back in Brazil now. But I did not know that 90s country is like massive in Brazil. It is like the hot spot. If you're say Alan Jackson or Garth Brooks, you will make 10 times the amount of money you make in the States going to Brazil right now.
That's good to know. I'm sure those guys are listening to the show.
Yeah, they're
listening.
Excited
they're to hear
that. Yeah. But there is a country western bar in San Diego that has line dancing night. And every year at San Diego Comic-Con, he would sneak out for line dancing night, and he'd be out until like 3 a.m. And one time, I never went because I wake up very early in the morning and run the table. Mm. But a bunch of the other people from Geekscape went with him, and they took a video specifically of him line dancing to Achy Breaky Heart in this bar. So every time I hear the song, I think of my buddy Guy just killing it on the dance floor in San Diego.
That's awesome. That's
Guy,
awesome.
This one's for you, buddy.
There you go. Oh, Guy, I have a friend named Guy. That's not a common name.
I just had a vision, as you described that, of the music video for Al's version of this could have been all of the other people he referenced line dancing together, you know, Vanilla Ice and Tiffany line dancing.
How amazing would it have been if he had gotten that everyone together for it? See, that would have been
the real people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, people, caricatures.
Yeah.
But I think if he,
some of them were not the appropriate age to line dance at that time.
93, he's got the right pull. He's got the pull. He could have.
I think he maybe could have pulled it off. For what it's worth, Regis and Kathy Lee also, of course, ask him, like, is Billy Ray Cyrus okay with this? And Al had to keep saying, like, yes, I talked to Billy, like, he's fine. Everyone's fine. It's okay.
Actually, yeah, he said Billy Ray wasn't mad, but he said he only talked about the songwriter in terms of like his interaction.
He did say he spoke to the songwriter who is a friend of Billy Ray,
yes,
and he was assured it was fine. But you're right. Wonderful. Al technically did not need to get Billy Ray Cyrus's permission because Billy Ray didn't write this song.
Yeah.
But right. It does seem like, from everything I saw, Billy Ray, I think, again, this is the funny thing. If you can have a sense of humor about yourself and you can enjoy it, all this is generating more attention and revenue for Billy Ray Cyrus. Well, even though he's not the writer of the song, it is a huge bump in the profile of an artist.
But there's also no way that Billy Ray Cyrus didn't also know he made a really annoying song. Like,
yeah, like, I mean, again, he didn't even write the song. He could be like, yeah, fine. You think it's annoying. Okay, great. Well,
because I think of, do you remember circa 1997, 1998, Hanson were the musical guests on SNL. And there, I think it was one of it may have even been the cold open of that episode, was Hanson being trapped in an elevator that was playing Oom Bop on a loop.
Amazing.
And, I have not seen that. That's incredible. Going,
like the elevator doors open and they're just like, they're just like shaking, like they've come out of a war. like I think artists who write obnoxiously repetitive, earwormy songs are aware that they've written an annoying earwormy song.
Oh, absolutely.
They have to hear it more than most people. They have to play it, you know, every constantly. Time they go anywhere and do anything.
Yeah.
You can't not play it.
I just finished editing one of the new podcasts on Geekscape is YAOK, which is sitting down and talking to authors about their YA novels. And the quote from the one author the other day, like they were asking like the process of rewriting and writing. And he was just like, well, I can tell you one thing. I never want to read my book again. the amount of times that I've rewritten this to make sure and reread it to make sure that there's no errors. Like I never want to pick up my own book again for the rest of my life. And I hear musicians say that after recording an album, I hear filmmakers say that after editing.
You watch it so many times and then you have to go like to film festivals and screenings.
To premieres. Yeah, exactly.
And you have to watch it. It's part of the job. And you're like, I've seen this 300 times.
I was going to say, because I'm still somehow one of the, for whatever reason, I think it was from a live stream years ago, I'm still the admin on the Pick It Up Facebook page.
Yeah, you are.
So every once in a while, I had nothing to do with this documentary, but my Facebook will just get messages sent to it, just like of people messaging Pick It Up, just saying how amazing the documentary is. And every time they're like, I've watched it for the 100th time. And I can't help but think, like, I bet Taylor hasn't watched that shit in, like, 10 years.
I love that you get those messages. That is a dumb artifact of the dumb internet.
Yeah. It's like, why would it send it to every person listed as an admin
who
hasn't logged in and used it?
The messages. Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, we've come to the ranking portion of the show. Matt, I think we've both agreed this isn't going to be in our top here, but...
No.
Where are we putting Achy Breaky Song? I'm putting it higher than I anticipate it, but still pretty low. It's not in my bottom five, but I'm putting it right in between Here's Johnny and Isle Thing as one of those parodies that I'm probably never going to re-listen to ever again.
Yeah, it actually is going to fall into my bottom five.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. I'm going to put it quite low.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm going to put it... in between the plumbing song and I Want a New Duck,
okay,
which is third from the bottom for me. So if you, my bottom five from lowest up is Toothless People, I Want a New Duck, Achy Breaky Song, the plumbing song, two songs, and then Isle Thing.
Well, and so, you can see our, there's a website now where you can see our full rankings, right?
That's so true. That's weirdalgorithmpodcast.com.
Well,
I looked at that this morning. I didn't understand the context, and I was very curious why this song. I was looking at the list, and I went straight to the bottom because I assumed where I knew it would be.
Once this episode comes out, you will see it at the bottom.
Yeah, we can't give away our rankings before the episodes are out. Now you get to do the guest ranking portion of it, which is the most insane spot on here. So this is our rankings from every guest who's ever been on the show talking about one of their song, talking about a song.
Great.
You get to place Achy Breaky Song anywhere on the list you want, and you get to move one song.
I love all the songs I can see. And I get to what?
And you get to move one song anywhere you want. If you think a song's too low, you can bump it up higher. If you think a song's too high, you can bump it down lower. So I'll give you a couple minutes to, I'll give you a couple seconds.
Well, you know what? While you're looking at that list, I'm going to tell a very quick story. Just one last little bit of press here. Just to give also a further idea of, well, this was later, but he did a lot of press for this song, so there was a lot of talk about it. But he went on, Donnie and Marie Osmond hosted a talk show in the late 90s, early 2000s, and Al went on to promote Running with Scissors. And while on that show, Donnie and Marie give him a nice little bit of grief about their inclusion in Achy Breaky Song. And and they're like, oh, you know, you like was, and they say the same, like, was Billy Ray Cyrus mad? And he was like, no, you know, like, I talk to people, I always ask for permission, so it's not an issue. And Marie just goes like, you didn't ask our permission to slam Amazing. Us in a song. He reads, it's so great. He reads the line, "You could torture me with Donnie and Marie." The audience boos him. It's just glorious.
That's
and then Donnie and Marie had a talk show.
They did. They did. Yeah.
Yeah. They
and then the only other thing, again, Al came up on his website as well. And Al was like, he knew they were going to mention it. It was all in good fun. Like, they didn't mind at all. It was totally fine. And then I like Donnie just takes a moment to go to Al and be like, you know what song of yours I love? Taco Grande. And wow. Donnie just like is a huge Taco Grande fan. That really tickled me. I don't know why. Which was so funny. Donnie Osmond great. Loves Taco Grande.
Which is great because as we're talking from the guest list, currently the bottom of the guest
our dead
list.
Last yes. guest song, well, Taco Grande.
We can change that.
There you go.
Having now read the list, let's put Achy Breaky right there at the bottom where I genuinely believe it belongs. And getting to move one sounds real fun. I would like to move When I Was Your Age up.
You can just say between,
Bedrock and Hooked on Polkas.
Between all right, look at that. So I mean, very I have cool. to ask.
Very specific.
When I Was Your Age. So are you a big When I Was Your Age fan from the Off the Deep End record?
You know what? I was when I was a certain age. I have not revisited that song in a while. However, that was when I would make like mixtapes for friends. That was the Weird Al poll I would put on there to be like, this song is awesome.
Yeah, he's got
also, I think I didn't have much exposure to like that style of music. I grew up, you know, very sort of urban R&B rap household. You wouldn't know it by looking at me, but you know. And that song is a little bit more rock than I was exposed to. I don't know. It was like, oh man, guitars are cool. That was like a song for me as a child was like.
The sheer idea that was your introduction to rock guitar is like my favorite thing I've ever heard. You need to like do a new version of that episode with you.
Well, I was going to say, I do love the idea that, you know, you just said that you grew up in a mostly rap and urban musical landscape before you heard that song, and that we had two rappers come on to talk about When I Was Your
we
Age.
We did. You're right.
And MC Large and Schaefer the Dark Lord were our guests.
That's amazing.
Oh my God. They were also talking about their album about the dark side of Disney, which ties perfectly into Vampire.
It's a small world.
Vampiremovie.com. Go
this is the
and
best.
Donate.
Best cross-promotional episode we've ever done.
Go and check that out.
Wow.
This was a great first appearance, and it will certainly not be a last appearance. Thank you so much for suffering through Achy Breaky Song on our BN. And we'll let you pick a song you actually like the next time.
Great. Tiny fun fact we skipped over. In the original video for Achy Breaky Heart, there's a woman in the front row who looks a lot like Miley Cyrus. It's her mom before they were married.
Ooh. That is good. Yeah.
It didn't come up in the podcast.
No, that was perfect. Yeah.
Ninety-One Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.